What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, the morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is April 26th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. Right after this, I'm recording the SP Fab Forecast. That is my PL Pro exclusive podcast, where I go over every single player for your 12-team and 15-team Fab decisions. That is every starting pitching player, I should say, and who I am going for this week. In addition, you also get access to my two-start pitcher rankings and my full-on sit-start grid for the following week. So I go through every start Monday through Sunday and I grade them auto-start, probable start, questionable start, and do not start. So you can quickly look at it and plan out your week just like I do every single week. This is just for PL Pro members. So go sign up today. You can actually get 10% off with promo code PODCAST. So go to pitcherlist.com/premium and then you sign up for PL Pro with code PODCAST, PODCAST, for 10% off. All right, Louis Varland was demoted by the Twins, and we expected Simeon Woods Richardson to take that spot, which he did. He went against the White Sox, otherwise known as the Cry Sox. In 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 6 Ks, we take it. He's going to get them again. It's fine. He's a Toby. He doesn't really do anything that exceptional. There are times the slider looks really good. It's down in glove side and looks nice. Cool, but it's really about establishing fastballs. They're 93. They're not that exceptional. And he doesn't really have a changeup or curve that I really trust. He tries to throw them in there, but it's really like a lollipop curve for a called strike. It's really fastball slider. It's good enough to be a Toby, but don't get too enamored with Simeon Woods Richardson. Zach Wheeler, ace is gonna ace. Justin Verlander, he did well. 4.1 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 4 walks, 7 Ks. He didn't want to get removed from this one, but 95 pitches. They didn't want to overthrow him. 16 whiffs because his four-seamer is doing great things at 19 inches of vert and 10 over 45 whiffs as he keeps it upstairs. And his curve, yes, not a super high strike rate at 58%, but not a single one was in play, which is really good, right? You get a lot of strikes and not allow any of those in play is always good, right? So, I mean, yes, obviously in play and outs are great too. But at the same time, that is a very effective pitch for him, and that's good to see. So with Verlander, you don't really expect him to be the 7-strikeout, 5-inning guy. Think of him more as a 6-inning, 6-strikeout guy. And that's very obviously helpful for your leagues. Mackenzie Gore went against the Dodgers. I was scared about it because I like Mackenzie Gore and he had a bad start the previous time. And it's just, I don't know if he's going to be more cherry bomb tendency or actually really explode the way that he should. And guess what? He had 17 whiffs in 6 innings, 1 earned run, 7 hits, 2 walks, because it is the Dodgers. And he got out of some innings with some double plays, 4 Ks, but 11 for 58 whiffs on his four seamer is so good. And he located it upstairs and oh, it's at 97 miles per hour and I love it. His curveball looked really good. He had some nice sliders in there. I know the whip and everything. He didn't get the win, and it's annoying that he gets the Rangers and Jays next. I believe in him long term. So I feel like at this point, doing this against the Dodgers just kind of showcases he has the stuff to make this work. Only 4 strikeouts. I get it. It's there. And the more I see Gore, the more I just feel give him time over this year. He's going to just constantly make the floor higher as he scales up. It stinks. As the Rangers and Jays, I think you have to hold on to this. I love Mackenzie Gore from like May 20th on. Yoshinobu Yamamoto against the Nationals on the other side. 6 innings, 0 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. 36% CSW. King Cole and his four-seamer still not going upstairs, and it's hilarious. And I know it worked, and it was fine, and I'm just going to keep yelling at this because I know it should be better. There is some fun conversation to be had about where four-seamers should be located, especially with the Dodgers and the Yankees. Grant Washburn reached out, and he mentioned, you know, because we talked about it on The Craft with Eno. If you're not listening to that podcast, what are you doing? It's such a fun podcast that we do once a week. Also, I'm going to have an interview with James and Tyon next week that's going to be on there. Some other fun stuff. So you could definitely go subscribe to The Craft, wherever you listen to this podcast. And with Yamamoto, the Dodgers and Yankees from Grant Washburn, they, I think, are looking at the fact that per 100 four-seamers thrown upstairs, I think he was saying that there's one more home run allowed inside a Yankee Stadium or a Los Angeles. And so let's think about that just for a second. And I think it's an interesting conversation because first and foremost, it's like, okay, what is the quality of those, right? That's just saying every four-seamer and Yamamoto's, I would think, would perform better than that because this is actually how the pitch shape is for that, right? So whatever that average is, then you take that and you say, well, it's going to be less than that. So let's just say it is the 1 over 100 thrown. How many four-seamers does Yamamoto throw in a given start? Well, this was 97 pitches, and I want to say it's about 40% usage. So that's 40. So 40 for 100. And then how many games are you going to throw in Los Angeles for the season? Okay, let's say you get 30 starts. That's 15 of them, let's just say there. So then you have a 1,500... No, I'm sorry, 14... 40 times 15 is 60, so that's 600. Four-seamers are throwing upstairs, theoretically, right? So that's saying six more home runs you're going to allow if you're throwing upstairs. But then again, you also throw some upstairs already. So of those 40, it's... You understand where I'm getting at is where it gets down to like three extra home runs or something along those lines, if you do the math here. And that's not enough for me to say no. Three home runs a year, theoretically, where you're also going to be, I think, getting just better performance overall and everything else outside of those three home runs. It doesn't seem like an argument that is justifiable to me. So it's a fun conversation. I think it's, yeah, it's not convincing to me. But I mean, this is just me doing quick napkin math based on that one thing. And I think there's a lot more nuance to it that we ought to talk about. But anyway, I just thought that was a fun thing for you to think about. And you can absolutely reach out to me about how I'm wrong about it. And I want to continue the conversation. And yeah, it could be very stupid in what I just said. And you're screaming at me right now. Okay. Javier Assad against the Astros. He's a Vargas rule. 5.2 innings, one earned run, four hits, one walk, five Ks. It keeps working. Man, he would have gotten a win if he was able to not do a Philly. That is, he went 5.2 innings instead of the quality start. He was one out away. And it just happened to be that the Cubs came back and got all the runs at the bottom of the sixth. And it's so dumb that a guy goes 5.2 innings. The reliever who gets one out gets the win. For whatever reason this year, I'm just becoming more passionate about the win stuff being different. It's just like, why does that reliever get the win? Just why? Like, no. It should go to the guy who made the most significant presence on the mound to put themselves in a chance to win, right? And that was clearly Javier Assad. Whatever. Cole Reagans got the win in this five-inning game. It ended after five frames. This is an old rule, of course, in a rainout. If the losing team has had the majority of their plate appearances or their outs, essentially, then the game can end if weather doesn't permit them to continue. Reagans got through five. They even knew as it was going on, like, please just get through this inning. And a foul out was so critical. And an Isbell catch in center was so big. Five innings, one earned run, three hits, three walks, four Ks. Do not use this game as any analysis. For real. This was such a disgusting weather game. Like, he took so many times in between pitches to clean off mud on his cleats. He was doing everything he can to brush off his hands to keep them dry. Pitches were popping out of his hand. He had lower velocity because he couldn't throw with conviction. Like, I'm amazed that he did one earned run in five innings. And same with Barrios, honestly, on the other side, it was two earned runs in five innings. And just ignore these games. Okay. Alex Wood against the Yankees. Castillo went as well. And you have Tristan McKenzie. And of course, you have everybody going tomorrow. And we're going to talk about all of that after this break. Alex Wood went against the Yankees, and he got himself a Philly and a win here. One earned run in 5.2 innings, eight hits, two walks, five Ks. I mean, that's 10 base runners, and he was able to do just one earned run. This is a birthday party. We move on. Birthday party being you celebrate once a year. Good day. Okay. Luis Castillo at Texas got the win. Six innings, two earned runs, four hits, two walks, and six strikeouts. Yeah, guys, Luis Castillo's had three great starts now, and can we please just stop acting like Luis Castillo is doing worse? Because he's not. Soroka against the Twins. Zero whiffs in 68 pitches. That's all I really want to say. Tristan McKenzie against the Red Sox. Four innings, 200 runs, six hits, two walks, seven Ks, 13 whiffs, 33% CSW for Tristan McKenzie. 70 over 48 fastball whiffs. It was at 91. It wasn't at 90 and change. I'm really just terrified of McKenzie, and this is just no way. He's throwing with a torn ligament in his elbow. Like, come on. Can't do this. And Nestor Cortez allowed two home runs to the Oakland Athletics, so it was 300 runs total in that third inning. And he went seven innings, five hits, zero walks, four Ks. Cortez is going deep into games right now. He's being efficient, throwing strikes effectively. And yeah, those two long balls are annoying, but like, you should feel good about Cortez right now. He's clearly in a much better groove. Andrew Heaney went against the Mariners, and PL Bot took Heaney as their stream pick of the day. It was it for me, but then I switched to Simeon Woods Richardson when that was confirmed. And so Heaney went 6 innings, 4 runs, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 7 Ks. And there was a debate inside of the chat if Heaney deserved a streaming victory or a loss for PL Bot. And because this was a loss, and it was 4 runs in 6 innings, I feel like that's the threshold where we're saying no. If it was a win, I would have said yes. Like, if he got the win, it would have been a streaming win. Because it is a sub-1 whip and 7 Ks. And I gotta say, Heaney, last start against, I believe, Atlanta, had the Blake Snell blueprint working with heaters up and then change of sliders down. And that's pretty much what we saw again here. And I would consider streaming Heaney against the Nationals next week. That might even be, that'll be top of questionable. Because I understand that Heaney is just notoriously a cherry bomb. He's had moments before and we just don't know really if it's going to be there. But at least we should consider that as an option now, as opposed to just saying, yeah, Heaney, no, we can't trust you. And like, this is him looking like his best. Mitch Keller is a cherry bomb and acted like a cherry bomb against the Brewers. I just don't want to go for this at all. You never know. To go to Hudson, of course not. Didn't work against the Padres. Randy Vasquez at Colorado in Coors. Yeah, we don't want to do this. And no, I don't know if he's going to even be in the rotation next week. It could be Darvish returning. If not, he's going to get one start, and you just don't want to go after Randy Vasquez. Nick Martinez didn't do well against the Phillies, and I don't understand why he's not throwing more changeups. 17% usage, 67% strikes, though. Like, what? Nick Martinez, come on. That's your best thing. Do more of that. I was so... I wanted him to start last year, and he's finally getting this opportunity. I feel like you're not doing the stuff that you should be doing. I don't know. Whatever. I'm going to stop acting like I know everything. Freddy Peralta against the Pirates. It was kind of funny. He needed one more out to go 5 innings, 5 earned runs, 5 hits, 5 walks, and 5 Ks. Really just a terrible game. It was 4.2 innings, of course. 18 for 35 strikes on his four-seamer. And the thing is, Freddy Peralta has looked so good this year because his four-seamer has looked so good. And this looked terrible. He just did not know where it was going. In like true classic Professor Chaos Freddy Peralta. That was his nickname, if you guys don't remember this. And then I called Dinelson Lamet General Disarray because he was Freddy Peralta 2.0. But Freddy Peralta, hi, don't be Professor Chaos anymore. That isn't your old life as a villain. Do not become a General Disarray. Be a neckbeard. But no, really, like, for Freddy Peralta, this was an anomaly of a start. You should expect him to rebound. And Chase Anderson against the Cleveland Guardians is not someone you should be starting whatsoever, and you know that. I'm looking forward to today's games. It's everything that it was yesterday, except Jesus Luzardo has elbow discomfort as another one bites the dust. I hope he's okay, and it's not anything major. But yeah, he's not going to be starting for the Marlins, as that's going to be a bullpen game in all likelihood. And it was an interesting conversation in chat if Max Meyer is going to get the call because of this. Maybe, maybe not. It's possible the Marlins, I mean, you look at the Marlins situation and you say, look, why would you start the clock on Meyer again? If you just put him in the minors for a while, you get an extra year of arbitration. It's so like 2 or 3 months or something like that. The argument against that is we see all the time that teams, even though they're not going to win this year, they are going to invest in the development of said pitcher. And Max Meyer will benefit if he does start in the majors more this year. I mean, you're just going to face better competition. He's clearly capable of doing it. And also, you want to give him the confidence that you say, look, next year we want you in that rotation doing and being a major part of this crew. Like, get yourself acclimated so that next year when we're more competitive, you are in a better place than you would be if we delayed you more. So I go back and forth on it. I think the Marlins should just do it. I think there's way too much, just like in Dynasty Leagues, there's way too much emphasis put on the seventh year, like down the road. Like, who knows what Max Meyer is going to look like in 7 years? You know, there's this whole thing. I mean, look at this, like Shane Bieber. Hey, it's his seventh year and Tommy John. I mean, you never know. That's all my point. So he might not even be on the Marlins anyway because they deal him, right? Then he's lost trade value. Okay, fine. But you get what I'm saying. And I would definitely just keep an eye on Max Meyer. If you have nothing on your wire, might as well just whatever spec ad. I'm not saying that Max Meyer is going to be great. It's just Max Meyer is fine as a Toby. If you need that, sure. What the heck? It's just a really good slider, and hopefully he develops something else when he gets his opportunity. Okay, looking forward to tomorrow's games, though. Tyler Glasnow, George Kirby, Sonny Gray, Aaron Civale are all good matchups, say, for Glasnow, and I guess Kirby, but, like, you're doing that. There's also Dylan Cease going against the Phils, and I debate between probable start or auto start, but honestly, I think Dylan Cease is in a really good place right now. And even though it's the Phillies, who aren't the most aggressively amazing, too, so I would be starting Dylan Cease here. And the probable starts here, it's Edward Cabrera and Mitchell Parker going against each other, and I love both of them for this. Edward Cabrera, I trust a little bit more from the stuff department, while Mitchell Parker gets the Miami Marlins, which is pretty bad. So both of those guys I would be starting. Casey Mizer, stream pick of the day against the Royals, because I think he's been much better in his recent starts. And the Royals, I mean, yes, I understand that they are not the easiest offense to face, but Casey Mizer is in a good place, and he took down the Rangers, for example, and I would think that with every start, Casey Mize gets better. Brady Singer gets the Detroit Tigers. He's a cherry bomb, but this is the Tigers, and, like, you gotta do that one. Jordan Hicks is a little bit of a cherry bomb, actually more of a Toby, because the sinker does do a really good job of limiting hard contact. Same thing with Jose Soriano. I think that Jose Soriano has a little bit worse command with his sinker than Hicks does. Hicks is much better at, like, keeping inside the zone, while Soriano is just a little bit more wild. And Soriano has a better curveball, or I should say secondary, than Jordan Hicks. So take your pick if you want, but I think both of those guys are worthy of your time. You have Carlos Rodon against the Brewers. He's a Toby these days. I don't expect the strikeout surge to show up. I hope it does, but I don't expect it. Same thing, Martin Perez against the Giants. Yusei Kikuchi against the Dodgers is a very tough one, because Kikuchi is in a really good spot, except that, well, his slider wasn't very good last time, but he's got his four seamers up, and his curveball was great, and he's, you know, this is the groove that we saw last year, but it's the Dodgers. So do what you need to do here. I'm probably going to just still do it. And Ranger Suarez is, like Kikuchi here, is cruising right now. I mean, he had his best commanded start last time, and when Suarez is doing that, you Vargas rule it, and this is against the Padres, which isn't the easiest, but I think I'm going to do it. Now, questionable starts here. You have Chris Paddock at the Angels, and that's not great, because Chris Paddock did well against the White Sox. Just keep that in mind. So it's a little shaky in my view, but I understand if you want to go for it. I don't think that Chris Paddock has, I don't know, the best stuff, essentially, and the Angels are getting a little bit better. Joe Adell looks good, Taylor Ward, and Mike Trout, obviously, so yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of this one against the Angels for Paddock, but I get it. He just did so well against the White Sox, and hopefully that confidence carries over. We have two really tough matchups for Hunter Green and Tanner Bibee. Both of them you should be cautious with, especially Bibee against Atlanta. It was a really good outing last time for him as far as Blake Snell blueprint, which I still don't think is the right move. I think you should go the Gallen method, but that's just me. And Hunter Green against the Rangers is obviously, cherry bomb-esque. Okay. Michael Lorenzen is a Toby, and he gets the Reds, and maybe that could work. Ronel Blanco is going to be pitching in Mexico City. So be careful. I love Blanco now, and the Rockies are not the offense that you should be terrified of, but this is worse. This is worse than Coors. Like, it is, I think they were saying 2,000 miles elevation more? Something like more. It's like, oh boy. So be careful. That's like, what, 7,000 versus 5,000, if I do that right, for feet? Because it's like 5,120, I think, is a mile. I think I remember this. It's so arbitrarily weird that a mile is 5,120 feet or something like that. So it's worse. It's just also the lineup for the Rockies. So do what you want for this one for Ronel Blanco. Still feels like a good win chance because Cal Quantrill's on the other side, and he's the very last one here inside of Mexico City. Ben Brown after Ronel Blanco at Fenway. Ben Brown is going to be starting now because Hendricks is on the IL, and that's a good thing for Ben Brown and not the worst spec ad, but again, I do want to mention, if you follow me about Ben Brown, I don't love his four-seamer curveball mix. I think his fastball is not this amazing, overpowering pitch. It's like 5 whips and 50 thrown or something like that per start, so it's like a 10%. And the curveball is a little inconsistent. He's not the best command guy. So it's really a two-pitch mix, which makes it look like a 5-6 inning guy at most. And this is Fenway, so just be a little careful of Ben Brown. I hope that there's something else that really he unlocks there. J.P. Sears at Baltimore. He just took down the Yankees, so maybe that works, but and it's Baltimore, but it's also the Orioles, and it's J.P. Sears. Cole Irvin's on the other side, which is a better situation versus Oakland, but Cole Irvin isn't that great. You have Charlie Morton for the win chance against the Guardians, and Joe Ross, sinker slider can be very good. We saw it last time. And the Yankees just got one run, 5.2 innings from Alex Wood, so maybe. And do not start tier is Adrian Houser against the Cardinals. If he throws enough fastballs, maybe this could work for 5-6 innings. At least he has the leash for it. Jonathan Canning against the Rays. I think he's better than what he was against the Twins, but obviously there's a very low... there's a very low floor here, especially given the win chance of the White Sox. Slay Sassoni against the Mariners, or Ciccone, which I think Eno said, which I think is just so fun. Against the Mariners, he's gone. He has enough of a leash to be able to go 5-6 here. And Josh Winkowski, I don't know if he has the leash for 5 innings against the Cubs, and I don't like his stuff anyway. And of course, the aforementioned Cal Quantrill, the unquantifiable, against the Astros in Mexico City, absolutely not. And one last addition that I often forgot about that I'm adding to these Plus Pitch podcasts, I'm going to take a question from our playback.tv chat. If you don't know, I stream the recording of this podcast and, of course, the process of me doing my daily SP rankings every single weekday morning from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Sometimes I run a little bit over, like today, which is 12:35 p.m. So... Ace Squared asks, hey, Nick, I hope you're well. Hey, I am well. Hope you're well, too. Would you go with Reese Olson today or Casey Mize tomorrow? Who do you like more to go far and get a win? Good question. I personally prefer Casey Mize over Reese Olson. I think Casey Mize has a stronger foundation with his four-seamer than Olson does with his sinker. Also, with Olson, we saw his changeup disappear a little bit after appearing in the beginning of the year. I do like that Reese Olson has a slider, but there is a little bit more precarious nature in his arsenal than with Mize, with a really good four-seamer and a slider that he's able to get for strikes. And then also there's a curve and splitter that is hopefully going to help as well. There's also even another ceiling, or another gear, I should say, for Mize with that slider turning into the whiff pitch. But just with that four-seamer, I think that's a better foundation than Olson. It's pretty close, but I'm going to go with Casey Mize over Olson for this weekend against the Royals, as they both get the Royals. That is it for today. I want to remind everybody that do not expect Plus Pitch podcasts over the weekend. I'm going to try to do them as much as I can. At the same time, I've realized that over the weekends, it's just been busier than it normally is for me. And just in general, the pitcher list. And it's kind of nice not to have this extra 30 minutes, 30 to 40 minutes I need to spend recording this and getting this up on the site every weekend. So I'm going to try to, whenever possible, just consider it as a bonus episode as opposed to an expectation. And of course, everything I talk about inside of these podcasts are on the site. That is my streaming rankings and my SP roundup. So if you are trying to get that information, it's there. This is just me articulating it a little bit more in depth. All right, that is it. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.